Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all about the Benjamins, baby. NFL free agency open for business. Yeah. Right here on the Monty Show. I'm Monty. That's Jake. Say hi, Jake.
Hi, Jake.
We got to talk quarterbacks. We got to talk Kirk Cousins. We certainly got to talk the association. The Golden State Warriors canceled practice today because they partied too hard last night and nobody denied it.
Literally, Steph defined it as lit.
It was lit. Big games tonight. The Jazz are getting Exum back, so we'll talk a little Dante Exum and the Jazz. Who's going to win the East? If it was ever Toronto, isn't it? This year for Toronto? Jose Mourinho. Yeah, sorry, buddy. Oh, actually, I'm not sorry. Talk a little Champions League, talk a little Pogba, talk about the Russians murdering more people in the UK today.
It's just a daily event for the Russians, you know, that's what they do.
And, we have to, sadly, I am not even making this up. We have to talk about dead puppies today.
Damn it.
There are two.
I told you that was a sensitive subject.
Bro, there are two dead puppy stories that should just make you want to go and whoop wholesale ass. Because something. Do you ever just hear a story and you're like,
what in the hell?
What in the hell, Hector?
Yeah.
Like, what were you doing? Steve Keim?
You know.
Let's start NFL free agency talk on the Monty Show. Because I think Steve Keim is one of the stories today. Amongst many quarterbacks, front and center is always in the National Football League. Kirk Cousins gets 3 years and $84 million from the Vikings, and it's fully guaranteed. 100% he's getting $84 million. He gets hit by a bus after he signs this thing. They're paying him $84 million. And I think it signals a bit of a shift in the way quarterback and position contracts are negotiated. Because you see guys like Jordy Nelson gets whacked by the Packers today. He's going to be a free agent. Yet you're chasing a guy like Sam Bradford, who got 1 year and $20 million from the Arizona Cardinals today.
Hope he doesn't get hurt.
$20 million to a guy that's got a reoccurring degenerative knee injury.
I would say
it's
a bad contract. Just another bad contract.
I'm sorry, wait. Did you say that's a bad decision?
Yeah.
This is the worst contract of the day. There's always one contract. It's usually the Browns.
Steve Keim found a way.
It is absolutely Steve Keim today. And I think this was a horrendous move by the Cardinals. Some of the other quarterback moves, not a surprise. We told you on the show yesterday, Drew Brees back to the New Orleans Saints. 2 years, $50 million. He's $50 million.
Yeah.
5-0, $50 million. That's insane. Josh McCown back to the Jets. 1 year, $10 million. Now, see, that's a Sam Bradford contract, right? Call me crazy. Josh McCown, because they did not get their first choice, Kirk Cousins, so the Jets went and re-upped Josh McCown for 1 year and $10 million.
Very reasonable.
Very reasonable, right? You're probably going to draft a quarterback now. What are the Arizona Cardinals doing? Josh McCown gets $10 million. He's a better, more able quarterback than Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford got double that, and he got a team option out of the Cardinals. It's insanity.
I just don't know how you begin to explain the idea that the Cardinals consistently overspend on guys they shouldn't overspend on. And all I'm saying is, look where you're at with the Tyrann Mathieu contract. I just think no way you could have predicted the knee injury. Okay, that's fair. That's a fair argument. I get it. But at the same time, you've got to restructure that contract now. It's got to happen. And now the idea that, all right, well, I got to restructure this contract, so I'm going to overpay for Sam Bradford, that doesn't make too much sense.
And if you are the honey badge you, if you're Tyrann Mathieu, are you eager to restructure your contract?
No.
You're probably not. I look at a guy in Josh McCown who got 1 year, $10 million. He played in 13 games, started them all, 67% completions, 2,926 yards last year before he got hurt, 18 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Those are not earth-shattering numbers, right?
No.
And you, neither would you expect it to be for a guy that got $10 million, which is pretty – Is the word average money for a quarterback? Like,
I would say that's – I literally think this is one of the most realistic contracts. $10 million matches up nicely with McCown. I mean, that's a nice contract.
And then there is Sam Bradford, who last year for the Vikings played two games before he got hurt and was done for the year. Year before that with the Vikings, he played 15 games, 3,877 yards, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Doesn't play in 2014, 7 games in 2013, 16 in 2012, 10 in 2011. Like, this guy is hurt every year. Every
single year.
Isn't
that what they just went through with Carson Palmer? And I get Carson Palmer's old, and that's why he got hurt and blah, blah, blah. But excuses are excuses. Either way, your starting quarterback's going to be on the sideline this year at some point or another.
It's stunning to me that he got $20 million. I think 15 of that's guaranteed from the Cardinals. Stunning. I mean, you went from one guy.
It's a bad decision. There's no other way to look at it.
Yeah, you went from one guy that was injury prone to a guy that's going to get hurt. Sam Bradford's going to get hurt. Some of the other notable signings today, Malcolm Butler goes to the Titans. Busy day for the Patriots on the wrong side of things, but Malcolm Butler goes to the Titans for $60 million. Do you like it?
I like it a lot for Butler. I mean, I think it's an interesting – again, that's one of those more quiet stories that I feel like for Malcolm Butler, I feel like we never really got a true story about what happened with him and the Patriots. I mean, we heard from different people, sources. We heard from different players and Belichick and everybody from the Patriots about what had actually happened. We heard about what Butler said he knew, and now all of a sudden he's with a different team, and he got paid. This is a nice amount of money for Butler. I mean, this is respect money right here. So
60
I like
mil's
it.
A lot.
I like it.
By the way, Danny Amendola done as a New England Patriots. He gone. He signs with the Miami Dolphins. It brings up the perpetual annual, can Tom Brady just stick anybody out there and make them a good receiver? Because guys generally go to Tom Brady to thrive, and then they usually die afterward. And I don't know what Danny Amendola becomes with the Dolphins or if he'll be able to continue doing what he did. But Ryan Tannehill certainly is not Tom Brady.
I'm not saying Amendola is going to be turned into an average wide receiver. I'm not saying that, but I don't think he's going to look as good as he did when he was playing with the GOAT in Tom Brady.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I think one of the real good moves today is Sammy Watkins to the Kansas City Chiefs. And obviously, you have a big change coming in Kansas City. You let go of a guy in Alex Smith that is your, I mean, he for better or for worse, he was your veteran leader in that clubhouse and in that locker room. He's a guy that you really counted on. You bring in Watkins to fit into a group of receivers that, frankly, I think is just going to be dominant. There is no doubt about that now, whether it's Tyreek Hill or Watkins. I mean, the weapons they have, Kelsey, the guys they have there, it'll be interesting to see if they are able to. And this, I think, is one of the big questions. Are they able to get Mahomes to a point where he can use Hill and Kelsey and, you know, all of these guys, Kareem Hunt's another guy. Are they at a point with Patrick Mahomes, who's replacing Alex Smith, who was a very good quarterback for a good part of last year?
Yeah.
Is Mahomes at a point where he's going to be able to use these guys?
I mean, I certainly hope so. That's a lot of weapons on one team. And
you
think
me?
About, you compare the Chiefs to other teams in the league, and you're going to have a tough time finding another team with that diverse of a spread of offensive choices.
And by the way, Sammy Watkins went from out of the NFL with the Bills, because he was this close to being out of the NFL, to all world with the Rams, to signing a 3-year, $48 million deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a great story.
And this money, again, puts him right into the names of Antonio Brown-type money.
He's got to be. Watkins has to be a superstar now. There's no other way to look at this. And I'm not convinced that Sammy Watkins is that guy. He was certainly one of the leaders on that Rams offense.
Yeah.
But when you have a running back like Todd Gurley, it creates a lot more space for wide receivers. And I think it's a really, really nice pickup for Kansas City. I think Jimmy Graham to the Green Bay Packers
as
a Bears fan scares the hell out of me. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens because, again, another shift, another, I don't want to say it's a changing of the guard because it's a wide receiver. Jordy Nelson has always been a Packer, will always be a Packer. The Green Bay Packers said goodbye to Jordy Nelson today. In a year where Aaron Rodgers was hurt most of the year and Brett Hundley comes in, Jordy Nelson put up an average season, subpar by his career numbers. I don't think he's done. And I think now he's going to wind up somewhere else. Where that is, I don't know. But Jimmy Graham, I think, slots in nicely there. They really like the tight end. If Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, which he's not proven he can do either, if Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, Jimmy Graham's going to have an all-pro season because that kid can still catch the football. He's still a force down the middle of the field and in the red zone. I really like it.
Are the Packers still the favorite to win the division?
Well, I think the Vikings are very good.
Yeah.
The Vikings are very physical on defense. They've clearly, you know, made moves here, the least of which is not Kirk Cousins, 3 years and $84 million. I think that they're the best team in the division until somebody proves that they're not.
Sure.
Green Bay is always dangerous when Aaron Rodgers is your starting quarterback. Now, they've got issues up the middle of the field, so we'll see how they do that. But on a day when the Packers let go of Jordy Nelson, Jimmy Graham really should soften that blow for Packer fans. And then there's one other one that I think is a very interesting move, and it's Star Lotu Lele to the Bills. And I'm surprised Carolina let him get away. It's interesting that Star had a lot of interest around the league and he chose the Bills. I don't hate the move, but I would love to see Star. Now, Philadelphia went and got, you know, Helati Nada.
Yeah.
But Star Lotu Lele is still a dominant player in his prime at this point. I got to think he makes the Bills' defense much better.
Yeah, certainly. Whenever you add a talent of his caliber, you can only get better. I mean, it's hard to add somebody that talented and get worse. So,
yeah,
I like the move, plain and simple.
Yeah, and I think if the Bills sign Teddy Bridgewater and they add more pieces to this defense, it'll be really interesting to see what they do because just looking up and down their depth chart, they needed an overhaul. They were kind of stuck in the mud, the Bills. Yeah. They needed an overhaul and an injection. But, you know, on really what is day one of NFL free agency, the clear winner here is the Vikings because that's already a really good football team. I think, you know, the worst move of the day, not to keep pounding it, I don't understand $20 million to Sam Bradford because you don't have weapons around him. David Johnson's coming off of a catastrophic wrist injury. You cut Adrian Peterson today. You have an aging Larry Fitzgerald who's proven he can play underneath and in the slot, but you really don't have any other wide receivers around him. That's the real head-scratching move of the day in Arizona.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think your point about them not having weapons is exactly where I would take the conversation as well, because it's great that you signed Sam Bradford to a $20 million deal and you got your boy now. But if he's got nowhere to go with the ball, I got news for you. Your offense isn't going to be some high-powered offense. So I think this is a nice addition. I agree with you that they way overpaid for Sam Bradford. I would have loved to see that be, you know, a $12, $13 million contract at most.
Yeah.
And then I think they got to go out and add talent. But the problem is you can't go out and add talent if you're them until you figure out the Tyrann Mathieu contract.
Would you cut him? You're not going to be good this year.
Right.
Okay. The Arizona
Cardinals.
Are they
in denial, though? That because it feels like if you think about where this organization has been, because I think it's a fair question. I don't think it's a hater's question. I think it's a fair question to ask of them.
Yeah.
Because I think if you look at where they've been, okay, you caught lightning in a bottle, as everybody likes to say, with Arians and Palmer, and then you got David Johnson. So you had a nice little setup. And then, of course, you had Fitzgerald. All right, well, now all those guys are gone now except Fitz. You know, so I think now you're in an interesting situation where you're not rebuilding, but you're not exactly winning. So what do? You overpay for somebody, I guess.
Sure you do, yeah.
I don't know how you...
The problem here is, the denial thing is really interesting. Because if you truly are not able to self-assess, you are dead in the water in the NFL. And the Arizona Cardinals, they're not a great organization. Steve Keim, their general manager, is a guy that was promoted from within, and he's really struggled in the draft. And the struggle for me is that they miss more than they hit. Now, David Johnson certainly is a great pick. DJ Humphreys showed signs before he got hurt last year that perhaps left tackle was going to be just fine. But how do you explain Robert Kimdichie? How do you explain, you know, a myriad, the Tyrann Mathieu contract 2 years ago that you and I said on the radio at the time that contract was signed that this was a huge mistake. And it was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
You don't have offensive line. You have phenomenal pass rushing. I mean, Chandler Jones, he goes out and makes the Chandler Jones trade, which is a great trade.
It is.
They get him on an extension. That's a really nice move. Marcus Golden getting hurt really hurt them because they didn't have depth, because they didn't draft well. Buda Baker was undersized and had a really up and down season, although it looks like he could play. I all of this to say, I think the Arizona Cardinals did not help themselves today.
Right.
And they need to cut Jared Valdir after June 1st. And if Tyrann Mathieu doesn't take a pay cut, and I know they're negotiating that, now they need to cut him as well. Because you've got to have money to go find somebody on the outside. And the problem is, you're not going to get a premier talent outside because those guys, Sammy Watkins, is already under contract with Kansas City.
Well, isn't this what we talked about last season? I think it was in June or whatever. We were talking about how they should be going after Eric Decker and several other names.
Correct.
And they didn't do anything.
Correct.
And we were very surprised by that. And then as the season progressed and we got into, I think it was November or December that they picked up Adrian Peterson. I think it was November that they picked up AP.
No, that was like September.
Oh, was that? It was earlier. September, yeah. So they go out and pick up AP, and all of a sudden everybody thought that was some great move. Well, now he's not on the team. So my point is, you're either going to burn this thing down and understand that you're not going to be very good, or you're just going to be pedestrian, and that's the problem. I feel like there's no emphasis on winning.
Well, there's a bigger conversation here.
Yeah.
And that bigger conversation is, what does it say about the NFL? When a guy with a knee that's never going to heal in Sam Bradford gets $20 million, is this league in trouble? Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com tweeted out today that this is a dying league when you have a guy, he said, quote, a guy with a degenerative knee will get $20 million for 1 year. The NFL is definitely dying. And I think
huge
this is
problem.
Yeah, I think this is Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton to the Angels. I think this is, I mean, pick the awful contract in pro sports. Sam Bradford, 1 year and $20 million. If he doesn't play all 16 games and you don't go to the playoffs, this was a waste of money.
Yeah.
You went backward, not forward. Is the NFL hurting itself? Is the NFL, do you agree with Florio that the NFL is a dying league?
I think it's definitely trending that way. I would have to agree with them on some level, because I think when you take in to account the money issues, the Sam Bradford style contract, then you consider the fact about all the discussion we've heard about concussions and health and how, you know, just that whole broad conversation and topic, I think really rubs people the wrong way. And then you get into the national anthem issues and owners versus players and the Colin Kaepernick situation. So I think really with the NFL right now, they need a win of sorts. And I feel like I'm talking politics here, but I'm not. I'm talking NFL. You know, they need something positive to happen. And I just don't think there's any answer for that. And so, yeah, I do think the NFL is having trouble keeping, you know, certainly women, of course.
Absolutely.
But the father of four who's 45 years old or 50 years old is having trouble following the NFL. And that's a problem.
And I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you fix that, because you see some of the money being thrown out today. And Drew Brees got $50 million.
And you were exactly right about that. Goes right back.
Yeah. And no-brainer. Kirk Cousins got $84 million. He got a wholly guaranteed contract from the Vikings today. The league is changing, and I don't know that it's for the better. I really don't. Let's switch gears on the Monty Show and talk some NBA. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And a lot of change is coming to the NBA tonight. And not to keep saying, well, we told you so, here on the Monty Show.
We are all knowing.
Uncle Monty is the god of all things that he already knows. not to keep playing that card. But we saw the death of a dynasty when the San Antonio Spurs fell out of playoff position for the first time in a very long time. And I think it's pretty clear they don't have the stallions to get back into the top eight spots. We told you yesterday as well that the Jazz would end the night in the eighth spot, and that's exactly what we have. And I think every game from here on out is pivotal. Jazz are hosting the Detroit Pistons tonight in a game that they should win, and the Jazz continue to play well. There are rumblings, and it won't be tonight, but there are rumblings that Dante Exum is ready to come back any day. Tony Jones, one of the best guys covering the NBA and the Jazz, Salt Lake Tribune, reported this week that Dante Exum will be back any day. Good or bad for the Jazz?
I got to be honest with you. I don't know that it's good or bad. I think it's almost indifferent because I feel like his lack of quality doesn't really allow him to be a force coming back. I mean, we've been talking about Kawhi Leonard coming back at nauseam, it seems like. He would be a force for them, right? Because he's a game changer.
Yes.
Dante Exum isn't that guy. Dante Exum is not Donovan Mitchell quality, obviously. He because it's very well storied. You know, Dante Exum didn't go to college, did all this other stuff, took a completely different route to get to the
Australian
NBA.
Kid went to a get me ready for the draft guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's an interesting situation. My opinion on Dante Exum is, how can it hurt?
True.
Because anytime you add depth in a guy that you know already, you're not going to get a guy off the street. Dante Exum knows the system. He knows the locker room. He knows the guys. I don't see how this can possibly be a bad thing for the Utah Jazz, especially when you look at their guard situation with Rubio and Neto and, you know, Alec Burks, not one of those three guys. I mean, Ricky Rubio is your starting point guard. But you have to do better than Alec Burks and Raul Neto. Now, the real question is, does Dante Exum offer you that? The truth is, who the hell knows? He's been hurt. He's missed a significant amount of time here. And there's a lot of unknown about Dante Exum because the one thing that we've been waiting for out of Dex is maturity and growth and that physical maturation that a lot of guys, whether that's Jason Tatum, Spider Mitchell's a different guy, he played in college, I get it. But these guys who played 1 year or were very slight builds, Lonzo, I think Steph Curry was this guy. You needed to come into yourself physically.
Brandon Ingram.
Needs to come into himself physically. Lonzo Ball might be the best example of this because he played a year at UCLA and he's still a child. You know, he physically is getting stronger. And his play is better versus a Kyle Kuzma, who spent significant time at Utah. Now, granted, the University of Utah's got one of the best strength and conditioning nutrition programs. So you would expect him to be more physically ready, and he is. I think it's guy versus guy. Dante Exum was not ready to compete physically as a professional. I don't care what league he would have played in, he would have struggled.
Right.
Now, though, could that be different? He has not played a lot of basketball. The expectations, I would guess Jazz fans have expectations that are not incredibly high, nor should they. So anything he really gives you is a positive. So I really like the idea that Dante Exum is available to you. Now, of course, Periscope is saying bring back Jimmer Fredette.
Right.
Follow me on Twitter. There was a great, I think it's Amy Donaldson, is where I saw it. The Deseret News did a great piece on Jimmer today. But Dante Exum is an interesting cat. You know, this is a third-year guy who's still only 22 years old that has, in his 2.5 years in the league, only played 148 games, going on three full seasons. So it's really interesting to see what he comes back and what he looks like. What kind of shape is he in? How are his legs? How long will it take him to get into game shape? Can he play 10 minutes? Can he play 20 minutes? It'll be really interesting. My point is, the Jazz are playing exceptionally, exceptionally well right now.
Right.
Dante Exum can only help that.
I think you're 99% right. The only thing I would worry about is basketball IQ with him. There are a lot of times, and we've talked about it a lot on our show, that he finds himself turning the ball over, making the wrong pass, or being in the wrong spot. There are mistakes that he makes mentally because he hasn't played big-time college basketball. He hasn't spent a lot of time on the floor in the NBA.
Yeah.
So that's really the only area where I could see him hurting them, because I think when you watch the Jazz, you see them get into a nice rhythm as the games progress, because what ends up happening is, you know, Gobert will have some monster block, they'll get out in transition, and then all of a sudden they're right into the flow.
Well, and frankly, this has been a different team since late January. The Jazz really turned a corner in late January. Oddly enough, I point back to the Piston overtime win on the road and the end of that road trip, the Atlanta-Detroit-Toronto road trip, I believe it was, where they went to Detroit and Toronto and got wins.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Golden State by 30. That little stretch, I think, changed this team. And they didn't lose a game in for a month, and they lost to guess who? Damian Lillard, which is no shame. And then they lost 2 of 3 to Damian Lillard and the Rockets, and they beat the Dallas Mavericks in the middle of that stretch.
Yeah.
And they haven't lost since they lost that game on February 26th, and they're playing really well. And they're doing that with Raul Neto as your backup. Like, I mean,
I don't know how you explain it other than the fact that either. They're a great defensive team.
They are, and I think some of it is that Rudy's playing really good in the middle. All of this to say, the NBA, I think there's some really critical games tonight. And you said something to me this morning at the gym. You said, there's not a great matchup tonight. There's not, but these games are really important. Lakers-Nuggets, hugely important.
Indiana-Philly is a big game.
Yeah, and right now, Indiana's taking it to Philadelphia. So, but you know what? I think that Indiana-Laker game, whether you love the Lakers or hate them because nobody's in the middle, you got to watch that game. Because the Murray situation with Luke Walton and the rest of the Lakers going after him the other night, I think that's interesting. It's at Staples Center in L.A. This is a game where the Lakers, you would think, would love to win this game. And I think this is a game that a wildly inconsistent Nuggets team stands a pretty good chance of not showing up for. Even though it's the Lakers, even though there's a lot of heat there, this Nuggets team is frustratingly inconsistent, and they have so much talent. But they don't use it well.
Right.
And Mike Malone is not anybody's coach of the year, nor should he be. But boy, I'll tell you, when they're really good, they're really good. Do the Nuggets make the playoffs?
All the inconsistency really makes me feel like they don't make the playoffs, but at the same time, when I look at a game like Lakers-Nuggets at Staples Center, the biggest thing I'm looking for is Julius Randle versus Paul Millsap. Millsap was
unbelievable the other night.
They were, and that's what I'm saying. They were going after each other, and you saw Julius Randle wake up, and then I can't remember who they played last night. He went off for 36 or whatever. So tonight, I'd love to see him dominate again.
Cleveland.
Yeah, against Cleveland. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The Nuggets played Sunday at home against Sacramento, so they're well-rested. I look at this schedule. There's some real tester games. I would not want to be the Denver Nuggets because I don't think they're going to make it. At L.A., home for Detroit, at Memphis. Okay, those are three winnable games. Problem is that at Memphis game starts a long trip. At Memphis, at Miami, at Chicago, at Washington, at Philly, at Toronto, at Oklahoma City. That's a 2-week trip, and it's really difficult. And then, oh, by the way, they go home for Milwaukee, Indiana, Minnesota at the Clippers, Portland at Minnesota. They've got a ball-breaking schedule.
Yeah.
So I don't think they make the playoffs. That's just me, but I if Denver makes the playoffs, maybe Mike Malone should be the coach of the year.
Maybe. I mean,
that's going to be really difficult.
I totally agree. You know? I think – you know, one of our Periscopers brought up an interesting question, and it's something that I think Jazz fans are still dealing with. How much better would the Jazz be if they still had Hayward? And my answer is candies and nuts, because you don't, and you're dealing with
can't
a guy. You just can't do it. You can't go backwards. And I think if you're the Jazz, and again, they've not done this in the past, but I think you got to look at making acquisitions at some point during the season. At some point, you got to figure out, okay, well, we've got Donovan Mitchell, we've got Rubio, we've got Gobert. We need one more guy. Yeah. One more NBA starter.
But if you look at the way the Jazz are constructed, A, I don't think that they've done a poor job with trades, because this is a team. Dennis Lindsay's a really good general manager. I think he doesn't get enough credit. But if you look at this roster, Jay Crowder's contributing. That trade, I think, was a really good trade for them. And if you look at some of the guys that make up this roster, now I'm not a Derek Favors fan. I think they've held on to him 3 to 5 years too long, really.
Yeah.
Because this was always the eventuality with Derek Favors. But I think he's getting contributions from the Jarebcos of the world. He's getting contributions. Look at Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles is a guy that they've really worked hard to develop. And I give him a lot of credit for that. Now, to your point, yeah, man, it would be really nice to have one more weapon. One more guy in Utah that could take the heat off of Donovan Mitchell. Boy, maybe Dante Exum has turned into a man. Maybe Dante Exum is going to find that he can really shoot the ball at this level now. Maybe Dante Exum has found all this physical confidence and he's going to go to the tin. I don't know. But if they had one more guy, they'd be great. Problem is, they're already really good. They're one of the hottest teams in the NBA right now. They're one of those teams where you're like, man, I hope they don't get the A spot. Let them finish ninth because we don't want them in the A spot.
Yeah.
Do you think the Rockets are looking forward to going to Utah for a series?
Probably not. No, I wouldn't be.
You think Clint Capella wants to match up against Rudy Gobert?
No, that's a nightmare matchup for the Rockets.
And who's the best rim protector in the NBA? Rudy Gobert. And who's the best at getting to the rim in the NBA? The freaking Houston Rockets. The Rockets don't want any part of the Jazz. And that, I think there's some pride in that.
I think, though, on the other side of that, the Rockets are also one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league as well. So I think they would, you know, you mentioned that they're one of the best teams at getting to the rack. I totally agree with you, but I think they're so good because they can also shoot the hell out of the ball.
Yeah. Well, and everybody shoots the hell out of the ball.
True.
You know, the Gordons, the Arizas, the obviously James Harden and Chris Paul. I mean, everybody on that team shoots the ball well. Yeah, they all shoot the ball well.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be a hell of a series. But having said that, I look at the Eastern Conference right now, and if you want to be a Toronto Raptors fan, do it now, because this might be the last chance you get. The Boston Celtics are falling apart. Kyrie Irving's not going to play. They say it's a minor knee injury, but he's not going to play. Gordon Hayward's not going to play this year for Boston. Marcus Smart has got this torn thumb ligament. He's out.
Brutal.
I have no idea what they're going to do. I really don't know what they're going to do. And it's because you have Jalen Brown out with this
freak
concussion.
Accident, man.
Yeah, where he lost the rim, landed on his back. I mean, they've got so many injuries now. They're not going to miss the playoffs. We were listening to some national radio today laughing because they're like, oh, Boston's missing the playoffs. Oh, are you paying attention? Are you paying at Boston? It's impossible for Boston to miss the playoffs. They've clinched. A. B, some of these, Jaylen Brown's going to play again. Kyrie Irving's going to play again. Those two guys on their own are fine.
Yeah.
It's just really difficult without a guy like Marcus Smart because he's the grip, because Jay Crowder's not there anymore. You know what I mean? So there's all of these chemistry pieces they're missing.
Well, and I think one of the biggest things that you look for in teams going into the playoffs, this little run-up to the playoffs, is what teams are going into the playoffs just scorching hot versus the team, the Celtics, let's say, who are going in cold, who have some injuries, who are having some, they're sputtering essentially going into the playoffs. I think that's a huge question every year.
It is. And I think you know the eight teams in the East that are going to the playoffs, because I don't see any way Detroit catches, Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any way Detroit catches Miami. I think you're going to see Philly, Milwaukee, Miami, Washington, Cleveland, Indiana. You're going to see Toronto, obviously, in Boston. My question is, how far do the Cavs fall? Because they're not playing good basketball.
And they're not far from falling a long way.
Well, you're only a half game ahead of Washington for the fifth spot, which is a real tipping point. Do you want home court advantage or not? How hard are you willing to work to get home court advantage in the NBA playoffs if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, and I think if you're LeBron, obviously he's pounding that idea home.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think there's any doubt this is Toronto's conference to lose.
Yeah, I don't deny that either. I think this year they just have everything going. And I think to your point yesterday, you said Kyle Lowry's playing the best ball of his career.
Absolutely.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
As is, you know, again, my comparison for the Raptors in the Western Conference is the Trailblazers. I think that the Blazers are that team that nobody thinks about that all of a sudden are really good because they're that team that's really hot going into the playoffs. So this year, Toronto's actually having a good year. They've been right on the cusp of making a lot of noise, and this year they're finally doing it. And it just so happens that the Celtics are down, and in my opinion, the Cavs are down as well.
Well, sure, the Cavs are down. They have chemistry issues. They miss Kevin Love. There's no other way to spin this. That team misses Kevin Love. And I think they're getting great contributions out of LeBron. Larry Nance Jr., I think, is playing really well. And that team needs Kevin Love. And I never thought I would say that because Kevin Love is very much maligned. But they really need that. There are some odd stories around the NBA, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are one of them. You don't trade your entire roster. You don't trade the entire roster and think that you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be fine. You're going to make the playoffs, but you're probably going to start on the road. And I think when you have LeBron James, that's just fine. The West is interesting. And the team I want to talk about in the West is Oklahoma City. Again, I know everybody's really close. Oklahoma City's only two games into a playoff spot. And that's a team, Russ got dunked on tonight in Atlanta.
Yes.
That's a team that now is really hot because they've beaten the Suns and the Spurs and the Kings after losing to the Blazers and the Rockets. They're going to pick on crappy teams. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
They're not a team that can go head-to-head with the best teams they face and win. They have lost to, these are their losses recently. They've lost to the Lakers twice, the Cavs, the Warriors, the Blazers, and the Rockets. Those are the best teams they've faced because they've beaten, now they do have that win over the Warriors, by the way, but they've also beaten Memphis twice, the Kings twice, the Magic, the Mavericks, the Suns, twice. Like, they're beating up on a soft schedule.
Yeah.
And I just don't think they're as good as the hype machine would have you believe. And you start looking at their schedule at Atlanta tonight, the Clippers at Toronto, at Boston, Miami, Portland, at San Antonio, Denver, at New Orleans, Golden State, at Houston, at Miami, Memphis. So they've got some testers in there.
Yeah. No question about it. I think everybody got really hot on the Thunder because of all the talent they were able to find and add. And then you were adding that to guys like Steven Adams, and you have guys like Grant who are nice role players for them. But I think at the end of the day, putting together that chemistry of a lot of talent is just a struggle for them. And again, I'm the guy who says that Melo is the biggest problem, and I think we agree with that. But at this point, Melo's turned into the Kyle Korver for the Thunder. I mean, all he does is run up and down the floor.
Yeah.
He plays defense when he has to, and he shoots a lot of threes.
He runs spot to spot.
That's it.
He plays the wing, truly. Real quick, though, I want to bring up this Steph Curry bachelor birthday party. Birthday party. I almost said bachelor party. Steph Curry had his birthday party last night. And everybody went. And by the videos and pictures and social media, it was a blowout. Steph showed up on a huge luxury yacht. Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond, they're all singing karaoke.
Yeah.
Today they canceled practice. They were scheduled to have a full practice day. They canceled it because, and they had no trouble hiding the fact that they canceled it because of the party. What do you think of that?
It rubs me the wrong way. I personally feel like...
Oh, does it really?
Well, here's why, though. Because I think we talk about how comfortable they are as a team. And I understand, sure, this was a nice team gathering. All the guys got together, had a nice
time. It was a blowout. It was a party.
Like, I get it. It's nice that they were able to do that. But at this point, I wouldn't want them doing that at this point in the season. First of all, you're not going to win the West, which is fine. You don't have to win the West. But it's still, you're not winning the West. And then number two, you better turn it up in the postseason, which I think they will. But at the same time, we're still wondering, okay, well, when are they going to start taking things seriously? When are they going to start that? You know, I read this article about what Steve Kerr has to stay on them about. And what did he say? Oh, I got to stay on them about, he used a baseball analogy for their passing choices. He said, I don't want them hitting home runs with every pass that they make. Essentially yes. saying, I don't want them making the flashy alley-oop play every single pass.
They lead the league in passes out of bounds.
So they're turning the ball over a ton. And I just say to myself, okay, well, you can keep turning the ball over. James Harden's just going to keep putting it in the bucket. So you can have this little party, that's fine, but you better perform in the postseason.
I like it because I think, one, it keeps them loose. Two, that's who they are.
But how loose do you need to be?
I think there's a lot of pressure on those guys, and I think there's a lot of wear and tear on their bodies. I think you need blowouts like that. I think you need to say, you know what, guys? Yeah, we probably should practice today. Why don't you sleep in today? Let's come back, play a game. We'll shoot around tomorrow morning. We'll play a game. Are you telling me that Steph Curry needs to run pick and roll? Are you telling me that Draymond needs to work on his jumper?
But it's not about the practice itself. It's about staying in the mentality.
Nah. This team doesn't need that. The Houston Rockets need that. Okay, the Cleveland Cavaliers need that. The Philadelphia 76ers, the Indiana Pacers.
So in your mind, the Warriors are still the best team in the league, though?
Yes, until they get knocked off. And this is a team that's been through the grind, man. They've been to the finals. They have elite talent.
Yeah.
They've been through that grind. They need a mental break. They don't need a mental edge. Because the Golden State Warriors, playoffs start, they hit a switch. Because they've been there. And you know how hard it is to be jacked up for a game in March?
Look, I'm not denying any of that. What I'm simply saying is that you better be able to turn that switch on. If you're in a party at this time of the year heading into the playoffs, you better be able to hit that switch.
Hey, maybe you tell me I'm right. Maybe we'll get to June and you'll be like, yeah, hey, how about that Steph birthday party? Maybe I'll be wrong.
You know what this is for me? This is the OBJ boat trip.
No. No. No, it's not. No, it's not. And why is it not? Because Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't done a damn thing in his career. Nothing.
What has Steph done?
Steph has won championships.
Okay, but you're the guy who says that Steph is not showing up in the playoffs.
Well, that's true. But Stephen Curry, whatever you want to say, that's his team. Steph's team has won championships. What have they been to, three straight finals or something like or whatever it is?
Yeah. No, they have.
Steph, they're an accomplished basketball team.
All I'm saying
team.
Is, hey, go have your champagne. Go eat your. But go have your.
Don't
fun,
compare this to a bunch of degenerate wide receivers and that went on
I'm
a
not,
boat
I'm
trip.
Not saying that they're degenerate.
Before that, it would be different if they had done this the day before a playoff game. Okay, that'd be different. If they had a blowout birthday
here's my point.
Playoffs.
I get it. Here's my point. What I'm saying is it's not about the actual trip. It's about the mentality. If they go into the playoffs and they get their ass handed to them by the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, there's going to be some real problems.
If they had done the boat trip on their bye week, which is the equivalent here for the Giants in the NBA, nobody would have said anything. They did the boat trip on their day off the week of a playoff game, which is huge in the NFL. Totally different thing from a team that's never won. A group of guys, rather, that's never won. The Giants have won, obviously, but a group of guys
that hadn't won.
Yeah, I hate that analogy, but whatever, it's fine. Real quick, I want to get to Jose Mourinho. I love Jose, the special one, the former manager at Chelsea, multiple championships for us in the Premier League. Yet they got crashed out of the UEFA Champions League today by Sevilla, and they got embarrassed doing it. They went out at Old Trafford this evening. In our case here in the Pacific time zone, that'd be this afternoon. They got torched by Sevilla. And after the match, what do you think Jose did again? He said, well, you know what? Man United's used to going out of the Champions League in the round of 16. That's ridiculous for him to say that.
That's who he is.
And well, it is who he is, but it's never quite been that flagrant. It's just not. This is what I don't like about Jose. And this is my problem with Premier League clubs, by the way, because now you've got two Spanish clubs that are in really good position. By the way, I'm a Chelsea fan, unabashed, unapologetic. The chances of us going to Barcelona and winning tomorrow, not good. That's not good, because they're very good. Jose Mourinho is the manager of Manchester United, arguably the largest club in the world. And you go splash cash on Alexis Sanchez, who, by the way, today, let me pound Alexis Sanchez for a minute, well, because I enjoy that. Alexis Sanchez, the Arsenal POS, the guy that couldn't stand to play for Arsene Wenger, and it turns out that, well, his teammates hated him too. We found that out this week, that Alexis Sanchez was hated in his own dressing room, which I think is hysterical, because then he goes to United, he's been a complete disappointment, fallen flat on his face, second only to Paul Pogba, who was this huge purchase by United, and we gotta have him, and oh, it's Jose and Pogba, and you suck, and I love it. Because I, as much as I respect Sir Alex Ferguson and what Manchester United has meant to the Premier League and bringing eyes to that league, what Jose Mourinho did today, and really what he's done since he got to United, is produce a lot of hot air and not very many big wins. And they're not going to win the league this year. Their little brother, Manchester City, is going to win the league going away. And now you're out of the Champions League. So what are you possibly going to talk about now? It's amazing how overrated a team like Manchester United is. And it's, to me, I think it's a great day for English football. And I know people are going to say, well, all those great English teams. I get it. I get it. The Premier League's taken a pounding. Chelsea's got a shot. If Chelsea somehow, if we pull off the miracle tomorrow in Barcelona, hey, we're all better for it. But I took great pleasure in watching Jose and that Manchester club crash out of the Champions League today. Okay, I feel much better.
Good.
Let's talk about Russian assassinations. Or should we do Russian murders?
I mean,
or
this is all death. So
Russian murders or dead puppies? And I'm not even joking about dead puppies. Let's do dead puppies. Somehow, and this is it. I want you to know this. I am not making this next story up. I'm going to turn the music down so you hear me clearly. I am not making this next story up. This is a true story, and I don't know how even to explain it. CBS News, and it's on my Twitter feed if you don't believe me, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show.
Again, to be clear, this isn't fake news, this is real news.
Fake news, huge. We'll get to Donnie in a minute. Idaho science teacher reportedly feeds puppy to snapping turtle in front of students. No, let me read that again. Idaho science teacher reportedly feeds puppy to snapping turtle in front of students.
Oh, snap.
I don't believe he did this. Preston, Idaho, a junior high biology teacher in the small eastern Idaho town of Preston, is under investigation by school and law enforcement officials after what school district officials called, quote, a regrettable circumstance.
No.
Wait a minute. You fed a puppy to a snapping turtle in front of kids, and it's a regrettable circumstance?
Bro, it's a puppy. What are you doing, bro?
It's a okay.
Dude.
Well, you know, you spin that how you want. A regrettable circumstance involving biological specimens.
Oh.
No, a-hole. This is your science teacher feeding a puppy to a snapping turtle. East Idaho News, citing a law enforcement source, reports that the teacher, Robert Crosland, fed a puppy to a snapping turtle in front of his students. Superintendent Mark Gee, what the hell? Mark Gee told the Idaho Statesman that the incident occurred after school on March 7th during a, quote, after-school animal feeding.
Wait, what's an animal feeding? Can you help me understand that?
An animal feeding is where you feed the animal, just so you know.
Right, but after school. Is that like a is that some kind of club or something?
An after school animal feeding is where you feed the animal after school.
Dude. Where do we come up with this?
I don't know where they come up with this. G said that Franklin County Sheriff's Office were also involved in the investigating of the teacher after receiving numerous complaints of animal cruelty. Quote, allowing children to watch an innocent puppy scream because it's being fed to a snapping turtle. That is violence. That is not okay.
Are you sure?
Says Jill Parrish, who filed the police report. She is an animal activist. Okay, wait. Can we just get this out of the way? This guy should be fired. Let me repeat. He fed a puppy, a live puppy, to a live snapping turtle. The puppy lost, by the way,
obvious,
and was yelping and screaming. while getting eaten by a snapping turtle in front of students. And they called this, quote, a regrettable circumstance. No, this is murder of a puppy. And you should probably fire this guy. And, oh, by the way, he should probably be incarcerated for animal cruelty.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But then, what is it, American Airlines?
United.
Oh, I'm sorry. United Airlines. Lady's got her puppy. Right? She's flying on the flight. They say, oh, yeah, we're going to have you put that puppy in the overhead compartment for the flight.
What?
Well, the hard part is she agreed to do that. And, yeah, it turns out that when you put a puppy into an overhead compartment, they don't survive the flight. Maggie Greminger is still heartbroken over what she witnessed on March 12th on a flight from Houston, Texas to New York, LaGuardia. This is a true story. The tragedy began when the dog's owner boarded the plane with a young girl, a baby, and a dog in a carrier, which the witness, Greminger, says look like dog carriers that she has seen others use on planes. Greminger was seated in the row directly behind the party of three and saw the woman place a carrier with the dog inside under the seat in front of her. Okay.
That's fun.
No problem. Because this thing, by the way, this dog carrier, it's not like a crate or a plastic box.
Yeah.
It looks more like a piece of luggage.
Yeah.
It's a soft-sided bag that you put your dog in, right? So shortly after she was seated, a flight attendant approached the woman with the dog and told her that the bag needed to be moved. After watching the woman move the bag from the floor to the overhead compartment, Greminger says she talked with her seat partner about how stunned they were to see a pet being placed in an overhead bin. Greminger started to look up information online about whether overhead bins were safe for pets and was unable to find information before the flight attendants told her to turn her phone off. We've got to go. Well, dude, as you know by now, the dog did not survive. And what the witness says haunts her most about the experience was hearing the canine call out from the overhead bin for the entirety of the flight. Okay, so here's my thing. A, no, I'm not putting my dog in an overhead compartment. B, I don't like taking my dogs on planes. Usually doesn't end well. C, if I had to put my dog in an overhead bin, which I would never do, and I heard it yelping and crying, I'm taking the dog out of the overhead bin. Do you want to kick me off the plane? Great, let's call the local news TV stations. We'll get this taken care of. Like, you can't put a dog in an overhead bin. Right, like, you can't do that. You can't.
I don't know how it's possible that this even happened. I mean, what did you think was going to happen to that dog?
I don't know. At the end of the flight, the owner opened the overhead bin and placed the dog's carrier on the floor. She soon realized that her pet had died during the flight and was absolutely shocked and heartbroken. A stranger on the flight offered to hold her newborn while she sat on the floor right there in the middle of the airplane aisle. She was holding her dog, rocking it back and forth. Her daughter was also crying and quote-unquote grieving. Greminger says the scene following the devastation, discovery of the devastation, was absolutely, quote, paralyzing. The crew, including the flight attendant who instructed the passenger to store her dog in the overhead bin, responded immediately. Greminger says the flight attendant who moved the dog seemed frazzled and claimed that she was unaware a live animal was in that carrier. Oh, please. So wait, the dog yelping and crying the whole flight didn't give it away?
Apparently not.
Do you sue?
Yeah, I do.
I would guess. I don't know. But here's what I would do. I would call the Space Force to try and help me out. Again, let me turn the music down. I'm not making this story up. This is directly from our President of the United States.
In the Oval.
Good old number 40. No, well, actually, he wasn't. Good try, though. He was in San Diego looking at the wall.
Great.
The prototypes of the wall. Donald Trump floats the idea of creating a Space Force to fight wars in space.
Against who exactly?
President Donald Trump floated the idea of developing another service branch. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Space Force! Trump said the idea started as a joke, but then he decided it was truly a great idea. Trump said, quote, space is war-fighting domain, just like land, air, and sea. Do we need an army to fight in space?
Why don't we need to create a force to spark wars? Like, I don't understand.
We may even have a space force. Develop another one. Space force. And we have the Air Force. We'll have space force.
And is Elon Musk going to head the aeronautics division?
The president described how he originally coined the term as a joke while discussing U.S. government spending and private investment in space. Trump said, quote, I said, maybe we need a new force. What a great idea. Maybe we'll have to do that. Trump said while addressing the United States Marine Corps at Miramar.
Okay.
Help me, people. So think of that, Space Force, Trump continued, because we're spending a lot, and we have a lot of private money coming in. Tremendous amounts of private money during my term.
I can't do it.
Donald Trump wants to create an Air Force just for space.
Why?
If he does, would you enlist?
No.
Why not? This is Star Wars. This is Return of the Jedi,
Wars?
Bro.
What, am I going to go up in a space shuttle that I can't control?
No, you're going to take off in like your own X-Wing fighter.
Oh, in my own Tesla. That's right. Yeah.
Well, it could be a Tesla. That's very
true.
Dude,
I'm not doing it. Well, I can't do it.
You know who won't be doing it? Nikolai Glushnikov.
I'm going to go ahead and say he's Russian.
Russian exile linked to as a Putin critic. Murdered in London. Another Putin
Another
critic.
Another one.
Murdered in London today. Nikolai, and I hope I'm saying his name right. God rest his soul. Nikolai, do not laugh at a dead man. Nikolai Glushkov, a Russian exile who was a close friend of a noted critic of President Vladimir Putin, has died from unexplained causes and circumstances, said London police. Glushkov, 68, was a close friend of a Russian oligarch named Boris, work with me, Berezovsky, a prominent critic of Putin. British media began reporting that Glushnikov's death, and the police issued a statement saying, quote, we're investigating the death of a man in his 60s in the Kingston borough.
Yeah.
It is widely believed he was murdered by the Russian government.
Yeah.
Two now. Poisonings.
They're not kidding around, dude.
And now they're killing people in the UK. Not once, twice.
Yeah.
What do you do about this?
Nothing. There's nothing you can do.
Okay. I don't know.
I mean, there's nothing you can do because they're good enough at killing people that you're never going to find them until they're dead on the street.
Vladimir Putin is a good guy.
Let's be friends.
Uncle Monty's got some life advice. Do not piss off Vladimir Putin.
Yes.
Because, like, there are ways to go. Being poisoned by the Russian operatives is not a way you want to die. Because apparently it's miserable and not good.
Yeah, not good.
Not good at all. So, yeah. Is this an act of war? Didn't Theresa May, the PM there, say that this was an act of war?
I mean, certainly it can be construed as that, no doubt about it.
That's not good. Lakers or Nuggets tonight?
Lakers.
Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.